Are you turgid?
Tarded? Yes.
No, I said turgid.
I am tarded because I don't know what that means.
I don't know. Yeah, he had to go clean his kitchen.
What?
I dare you to keep that in the cold open and see what happens. I am not responsible. I do not condone what Casey just said, for the record. Well, I'm glad I've never had to deal with that.
That's because you suck at Tinder, Juan.
I do!
That was a friction masturbation joke for those of you listening at home. Soft, sensual,
lying
next to the fire, warmly caressing your bottoms.
Oh, no. I'm so glad I don't have to edit this. But God knows what Casey's going to let fly into.
Don't want to make you guys all jealous, but I'm a professional TV watcher now. Yeah, Nielsen sent me $10 in the mail today to watch TV.
They sent me that like 3 months ago, and I never opened the package.
It had $10 cash in it.
Cash money, dog.
I didn't even have to do anything?
No, didn't have to do jack shit.
Assume they sent that after.
I wish I could finish my PhD in 3 months.
How long does it take? It's only like 3 letters.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Hammer and Rails podcast. Football season has started and we are back. That's right, back again. You can tell a friend, we are back. With us tonight, we have first, manning the ones and twos in the city where the women have loose morals, Ann Arbor, is Juan. How are you doing, Juan?
Doing okay. Guess living the dream? Not really. It's grad school. There's no dreams in grad school.
No, you're not in grad school. You're getting a PhD.
My soul is dead.
It sounds better.
Yeah.
That would be Andrew Ledman joining us from our nation's capital, soon to be Esquire. Andrew Ledman, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How you doing?
I'm good. And then also recording tonight as a backup, because he is the Padawan learner to Juan's recording.
I'm the first one. He's backup.
He's pouring the drinks, our resident bartender, Casey.
No. I am the Juan that you can trust.
Oh, no.
Well, thanks for joining us on the last episode of the...
Yes! No more work.
So, as I mentioned here at the top of the podcast, we're going to talk some football because for the first time in God knows how long, we actually have hope with a football program, and I don't mean Danny. The Jeff Brohm era got off to a surprisingly good start Saturday night with a very narrow loss to Louisville in a game where Purdue was actually leading with 10 minutes to go.
Moral victory!
It can be claimed as a moral victory, but in reality, I think it was a very good start, and that's what makes tomorrow night very interesting, as Purdue will be hosting Ohio. So what were some of your thoughts from the opener, guys?
I couldn't believe we were in the ballgame, like, at all. And I know that sounds depressing, and that sounds like, oh, you didn't believe in the team. But let's be honest, if you really thought Purdue was going to hang with Louisville, you were not being honest with yourself. Because Purdue was outmatched on paper at nearly every position on the field. That's not me dumping on the players or anything else. It's just someone else is better than you. It happens to almost all of us.
You know where they're
so
not better?
The fact that we were competing in that game says so much more, I think, about the coaching staff and about the way they motivate those players and use the players to their strengths than it does anything else.
And especially when you look at it, and, you know, I know that Purdue had a lot of good luck in there with the two fumbles inside the one, really should have been the third fumble inside the one, but, you know, Purdue also still had a bunch of mistakes with three turnovers and a couple of bad kickoffs and everything else, and yet, like you guys said, they were still in it.
I can't remember the last time our defense came up with a stop, and we came up with two or three late that were just honest to God shocking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it feels, despite losing Neil early on and already having a defense that didn't have much depth, we played from first quarter to fourth.
There were a couple of stops that stood out. It was early in the first half there. I think it was in the second quarter. We held him to a field goal inside the 10-yard line. And that was the play where it looked like Lamar was just going to get out and do Lamar Jackson things. And then there was the one at the end of the game where we also held him to a field goal that pushed the lead to 7 and kept us within striking distance. And, you know, I got to say, from being in the stadium and everything, much of the day, much of Louisville's offense that they had success with, it was just pretty much the, okay, well, we're going to let Lamar Jackson do Lamar Jackson things. And, you know, it's very hard to take away a player like that because he's just that good. But I was very pleased that Purdue was able to take away a lot of the other stuff that they could have done, if that makes sense.
The best team we're going to play for a little while, and we were all expecting a year to where we'd have a couple games against the bad teams where we'd look okay, and then now that we've actually stayed on the field and looked like a competent team throughout, every game's on the board now. The bowl game is in play. If we come up with some big plays in games where we don't have the mismatch of going against a Heisman Trophy winner, you know, we might pull a game or two out that no one expected us to, and pretty much one game turned around every fan's perception of the team and changed what we can hope for going forward.
Exactly. And I think that's what makes tomorrow night so important, because you don't want to see that step back that the Hazel teams always had when they were, you know, quote unquote, that close to breaking through. And, you know, I the ingrained Purdue fan in me still sees that happening, is the, okay, I'm bracing myself for the inevitable 35-17 loss at home to a MAC team.
Casey brings up an interesting point. For me, my expectation coming into the season was, at best, this team would be 4-8. I don't know. This changes my expectations, but I don't know what that does to my overall view of how to judge a successful season at this point. Does that change anybody else's opinion on what we have to look for this year?
I don't think it changes a ton, because it's still, we are left with the stink of Hazel and disappointing recruiting classes and a team that just doesn't have the depth or the experience lined up to make a truly successful run when it comes to win and losses. It kind of just feels like you walked into a casino and the first slot machine, you hit enough to cover what you were going to bet for the rest of the night. So you're just playing on house money at this point. I don't think you can realistically expect this team to, if we get injured in a couple places, if we just get tired, if a couple things don't go our way that went our way this game, the score is going to be a lot uglier. But the fact is, we saw a coach that has a team so much more prepared than we've seen in a long time. They just looked competent. The offense had space. It had movement. It had open receivers. It had smartly designed and well-called plays. Everything's
changed.
And we
still didn't even run the ball that much either.
Right.
I mean, still one-dimensional, chucking the ball all over the field, which could be good and bad.
Everything's changed except the one thing that can only change through time, and that's having the players that Brom can bring in to fit, to maximize the system he has.
Yeah, I think Purdue can hold serve tomorrow night, which I'm thinking they will. I think they'll beat Ohio tomorrow night. It makes the Missouri game that much more interesting next week, especially with as many points as they were able to put up last week against Missouri State. So let's move ahead a little bit to tomorrow night against Ohio. What type of team are you guys expecting to see in the first home game? The night game, that's right, the campaign to get the lights is complete. It's going to be a good one, a Friday night showcase in front of the nation.
How many... and this is maybe just me being ignorant, how many games from college football are there tomorrow?
Well, no, there's about five, I think, when I did the schedule. But we're the only Big Ten team playing tomorrow night.
Okay. Yeah, I think the only ranked team is Oklahoma State has a strange game at, like, South Alabama or something.
So, I mean, I think it gives us a good chance for national exposure. Sure, we're on, what, FS1, which is, you know, not great. That's not the first station you probably choose, but it... it's one of a handful of games a lot of people will be watching, because people watch football. They'll watch any game that's on. So if we can go out and show we're not the Purdue that people think we are, and, you know, take it to a MAC school. Granted, Ohio is a good team. You know, they won the MAC last year. So we have a real opportunity to show that we're not who people think we are, and that we can begin to dig ourselves out of the giant PR hole we've built over the last few seasons.
Yeah, and I think it's also big that I saw where they're expecting a crowd of about 40,000 tomorrow, which, you know, 40,000 people.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Shut up, Michigan man.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's higher.
That would be nice, because our largest crowd last year was 41,000.
Right, and we had six games above 40,000 since 2014.
Oof. I think they're offering, what, $5 tickets?
Yeah, and they said they sold over 11,000 student tickets, and those are going for $5.
I think there's going to be a lot of buzz. The fact that we showed up well, but also just, you know, the first Friday night game, there should be a lot of electricity. People get out of classes. It makes a lot more sense to, like, you know, start drinking at 5 o'clock and go to a game at 7. I just think the atmosphere is going to be fun. And I hope we win just so, like, that'll carry over into the season, because there's already been a bunch of momentum just from one game.
And I think we're going to have 40,000, but it's probably going to be 40,000 excited people versus 40,000 at a noon game against Indiana State, where everyone's just like, oh, we're just here because, oh, sure, why not? So it's going to be a different atmosphere, I think.
Yeah, when's the last time a football game felt like an event?
Oh, maybe the Notre Dame game in 2013, maybe.
The second half against Nebraska in 2015.
Well, I think that was...
Never forget that Purdue beat Nebraska 55-45.
That was a weird game.
Yeah, it was.
It was amazing to attend, though.
It was a weird game in that we were up 42-16 entering the fourth quarter. We still almost blew it.
That's not the surprising part.
And that was the only win that Daryl Hazel had in Big Ten play at home. Thank you, Illinois. Thank you for making us feel a little bit better.
Oh, anyway, enough of that garbage.
So you mentioned that, Ledman, that 4-8 was kind of your, you know, best case scenario. Would you guys say a bowl game is on the table now, even if it's just returning to Detroit?
I'd say have to go at least 2-1 in this stretch here. I mean, the one loss being against Louisville, but if they can beat Ohio and Missouri, I think a bowl game talk is possible, because at that point, the Rutgers and Illinois games almost become must-win game or should-win games at this point. And then, you know, maybe Purdue can steal one from Northwestern. They didn't look too great against Nevada. I mean, granted, Northwestern always starts the year kind of iffy. And then they might be able to steal one. Because if they beat Ohio, Missouri, Rutgers, Illinois, and Northwestern, that puts the sixth possible game against IU. And I don't know, I think it'd be pretty sweet to get the sixth win against Indiana, like they've been doing to us the last 3 years,
and the same year
and get the bucket back.
Clinch the Big Ten against IU.
Oh yes, that would be wonderful, especially since, you know, going 6-6 and winning the bucket is, you know, the pinnacle of football achievement if you listen to some of their fans.
But. Yeah, I just want to stop for a minute and point out, I'm pretty sure Juan just said two states' names incorrectly.
Wait, which ones did I say wrong?
I'm pretty sure you said Illinois, but you didn't use it in, like, a possessive way.
Damn it!
And
no, they're not a real state anyway.
And you said Nevada.
Did I? No, I meant, so Northwestern played Nevada.
Yeah.
And so I was saying that Northwestern didn't look that great against Nevada, so maybe I just stumbled upon my words. That's what I meant to say. I used the best words, okay? The biggest words. Sad. You're wrong, no. Ledman. You're wrong. You lost. Deal with it.
I still don't know that a bowl game is possible. I mean, obviously, I shouldn't say possible. I'll take the Kevin Garnett approach and say anything is possible. We're still 0-1. You know, one game into the season, we're exactly at the record all of us thought we would be. In that sense, it doesn't really change. But do I think it's more likely than I did, you know, a week ago? Yeah. But it's still, I think, a very small likelihood.
I liked one of the things that I saw this past week where it was Purdue's defense is playing about as reckless as possible, and that's going to lead to an upset of somebody, but they're also going to get boat raced by somebody. So they were like, congratulations on beating Wisconsin in Madison, but you're also going to lose to Illinois 45-3.
I will take that.
I don't agree
that we
were reckless. We
haven't beaten Wisconsin since 2003. I will gladly take the Wisconsin win if that means we lose to Illinois again for some ungodly reason. I'll take it.
No, but
I thought we were super disciplined on the defensive line against Louisville, considering how athletic Jackson is. We kept him in the pocket and well contained without giving up lanes much better than I thought we would.
But he still converted a lot of third and long.
He's a Heisman winner.
He won the Heisman. I mean, we can't.
He was going to.
We have expectations now, guys.
I know, it's weird.
I mean, and that's the key thing. You said a lot. He didn't convert all third downs. This is improvement.
The front line looked good. It was a secondary that I think still looked iffy, where he was able to get a lot of passing yards there. And then I think once Neil was ejected for the BS targeting call that I'll try not to complain about, that obviously hurt the defense too. I think, towards the end.
Yeah, and like you guys said earlier, the defense was still making some key stops. I mean, it had the bend but don't break mentality. And, you know, when you consider that they had, I think they had four touchdowns, was it? But one of them was a defensive touchdown, and the other was after three very questionable calls, a pass interference, a alleged targeting, and the fumble at the goal line.
The pass interference was pass interference.
Yeah, I thought
there wasn't anything questionable about it.
Yeah, but the targeting, and then when they showed the replay on the screen, I thought for sure they were going to rule ball out of bounds, Purdue's ball at the 20, and they gave him the touchdown. I thought it was ridiculous.
They didn't have the angle. It looked like a fumble to me, but
yeah, it looked like a
for
fumble.
For some reason,
but
we still don't have the proper angle on those plays. Yeah. I don't know why.
I was going to say,
why isn't there just a camera straight down the goal line?
Yeah. How many years have we been doing instant replay in the NFL and in college football? How do we not have a pylon cam?
Because it wasn't an ESPN game.
But
ESPN is the one who has the pylon cam.
My God, Fox Sports 1 has the budget for one more guy to stand there.
I agree. Those pylon cams should be a standard across the entire NCAA. It shouldn't depend on who's covering the game. That should be a standard.
Yeah, let's fight the NCAA.
I agree.
Hard.
Let's fight those refs. I really had to hold myself from making the four-hour drive to Indy to fight those refs after that drive.
Well, you could have just sent me a message. I could have dove down from the upper deck.
You have a kid, okay?
He wasn't with me.
I can finish my PhD in jail.
Wow.
Maybe. I don't know.
Is that a statement against prison systems? or for prison systems, but against the educational system? I'm unclear.
I already almost got arrested in a Louisville game once before. I don't need to do that again. So
okay, let's pull ourselves out of this jail tailspin.
Let's talk about something else, and let's move on to some Purdue basketball. I know it's still early September, but we've already seen 8 games, really 11 games if you count the 3 exhibitions and all that, and Purdue goes 10-1 against the world, comes home with the silver medal from the World University Games. Casey, I know you watched most of the games since you're up at night as a bartender.
I'm not naturally up at 5:30 in the morning. I had to set a goddamn alarm and go to bed early, throwing off my entire life for like a week to watch some illegally streamed Mandarin broadcasted 3/4 of a game.
Anyway.
I am so f*** CBS. F*** them. Burn them to the ground. I hope that B stands for burnt to the ground.
It stands for broadcasting.
Anyway,
What
did you think of the team and what you saw? Do you think a silver medal was about the appropriate result, or is it kind of disappointing it didn't take home gold, or what?
America, Travis, silver is never appropriate.
Well, excuse me.
Jesus, participation trophy bull. No. First of all, it can't be overstated how awesome it was to watch the team I love, the team we all love, the school we all love, represent the country we all live and love. And, like, there's just something about that combination was, like, once in a lifetime. Like, I never would have, in my wildest dreams, thought those two things would go together, and it was great. As far as how we performed, we came really close, and that tournament is just brutal. We played 8 games in 10 days. I don't know how familiar people are and just, like, how painful it is to play back. There's a reason we space out basketball games between 2, 3, 4 days. Your joints do not respond well after playing that much, after that much travel and everything. So by that gold medal game, it's just a matter of who's toughest and who's in the best condition, shape, and all of that, and weird things will happen.
Well, part of it too was, I mean, they were using FIBA rules, and I mean, granted, they had been practicing throughout most of the summer, but really they had only been competing with those different rules since about beginning of August. And I mean, there's a lot of similarities, but there's still enough differences that I think, you know, could have thrown off the team at some points. Like, I think goaltending's allowed in FIBA rules or something along those lines.
You can knock a ball off the rim.
Right, and so I know Foreman complained about that because there are apparently quite a few points that Purdue could have scored had it not been for that rule. So there was definitely some adjustment there that Purdue really adjusted to. And I mean, granted, it still took its toll, but
The biggest rule difference Robbie Hummel talked about it when he moved over to play international ball, is you're not allowed that first step when you catch a ball to go. It's a travel. And there's a lot of times where, you know, I mean, that's just habit. That's how you get by someone, being quick. And when you change to international, you're not allowed to take that step before dribbling. That alone kind of gets in your head, and you have to change everything the way you play.
See, I didn't know that. Then again, I'm not that athletic when it comes to taking that first step. I've lost my first step a long time ago, so.
That implies that you had a first step.
Oh, I always had a first step.
It was the only step.
See.
Towards mediocrity, perhaps, but.
Ouch.
I can only talk trash to Travis in this because I'm terrible at basketball.
So am I. I was a professional bench warmer in the eighth grade.
Well, there you go.
I think Casey actually plays basketball, so I'll cut him some slack, and I'm sure he could take me down. So
I'm kind of a stud. They call me Fat Curry.
I don't think anyone calls you that.
That's not true. It's my nickname.
I don't think you calling yourself that counts.
I yelled it loud enough that people started to say it back.
Okay, no. That's fair.
So I don't think that there's a lot of shame really in losing to a team like Lithuania because, you know, they're really good. They had a lot of height. I know there was the age factor where some of these teams have, you know, much older players than we do. And then I know that Gaben guy for Lithuania, he played for Notre Dame last season. He'll be a senior there this year. And, you know, Purdue even had some familiarity with him because he had 9.6 rebounds, 3 assists when we played him in the Crossroads. So, you know, this was like playing an NCAA tournament level team, and you can, you know, there's the concern that they were obviously the best team we played and we didn't win, but like you guys said, it was the third game in 3 days, the eighth game in 10 days, and team really did look gassed in that fourth quarter.
Yeah, well, also we didn't have Harms throughout the entire tournament because he was a U.S. citizen. So this technically wasn't even the complete team.
But I think we still saw a lot. And, you know, I kind of want to get you guys' impression on, we have a very clear top five and a pretty clear top seven or eight with Taylor and Klein coming off the bench. But, you know, I was a little bit disappointed that we didn't see some more from the freshmen and especially Eden Ewing, because it's like, okay, Ewing is supposed to be a guy that as a JUCO is coming in to play immediately. He's supposed to be ready. And he had a really quiet tournament.
Painter has always had his guys he trusted and doesn't trust. It's pretty clear that there are eight people that he's willing to play right now that are solidly in his rotation. And then the two X factors are Ewing and Wheeler. And they're both kind of, in theory, vying for the same spot as a hybrid wing big man. Both of them didn't look ready. Neither of them really have a jump shot. Really, neither of them have a position. They're not skilled enough to be a three, and they're not really big enough to play the four on defense without fouling. The nice thing is they got some game competition to see that and to see where they can improve. But both of them are, you know, they're future projects because Painter's rarely going to go over an eight-man rotation. And our eight men are solid. We saw the biggest thing from the tournament is that everyone improved. Vincent Edwards' shot-making has nearly tripled. He was taking shots and hitting shots that I've never seen him even take before, and he was knocking them down with confidence.
That was Vincent. Vincent's the evil twin that sucks at basketball.
Look, if you want to go against his mother's wishes, you can. I'm going to call him Vincent.
I'm going to call him Vince because every time we called him Vincent, he sucked.
You can, like, tweet his mom. Tweet her. Tell her that.
She knows my stance on this. I know she reads this.
Wow.
I want Vince.
Mom trumps Travis, I'm pretty sure. But PJ was really good in some games. His jump shot's quick. He's confident. He knows how to play. Klein looks way better. His ball control is improved. He was running the offense at points. Carson's jump shot, like I wrote earlier, he's worked on it all summer, and it's so much better. Last year, you know, he took – the shots weren't super different. Like, he's still taking a ton of pull-ups, but now he's hitting them. And when he's hitting them, he's able to go off for 30-plus points. And to have a player like that, Purdue hasn't had one since Etuan, and that's huge.
Is he the next red button?
You are so obsessed with this red button stuff.
Each one was hit the red button for offense. You need a basket, you get him the damn ball. And we haven't had that in a while.
I mean, he is, but Vincent is too. That's kind of the thing, because Vincent's improved on that area of the ball. Just his mid-range game with step backs and spin moves and weird floaters. Like, now I think we have two of them. I think Vincent and Carson are both capable of making their own shot. Carson alone, just in like pull up threes, he's going to get 9 points a game. It's crazy.
I was very impressed with Carson, and I think that he probably has had the best summer of everybody, mostly under the, you know, that experience not only at the World University Games, but with Team USA when he went to Cairo. And I think the only concern that I would have with Carson there is I'm hoping he didn't wear himself out, you know, and play too much this summer, if that makes sense.
19, 20-year-old kids can't play too much basketball. Not when you're playing. I mean, it's not like they were going to be playing regardless, whether it be pickup, this, whatever. You cannot translate the experience he's had this summer. He's probably aged a year in gameplay. Just knowledge-wise, he'll be fine.
I think they played, what, 7 or 8 in Cairo? So, yeah, 8 games. So that's 19.
I don't know how many there.
You know, where does Harms fit in with this then? You know, that's kind of what I'm thinking here is like everyone's like, oh, well, we'll get Harms. And I'm like, you know, I don't think that he's like an instant impact going to, you know, instantly come in and give you 15 minutes and 10 points and 5 rebounds a game. It's he's a project 2-star center. As much as the kid, you know, sure, it's been a benefit that he's been able to practice with the team and whatnot, and that he was able to get there and go through the second semester last year, but I don't think he's going to turn into this instant end-all be-all sub or anything.
He's a tall guy that could be insurance if Jaquill Taylor gets in foul trouble really quick.
Or, unfortunately, if Jaquill gets hurt again.
We don't say those words.
No, because I'm driving the Jaquill bandwagon. Jaquill's going to have a breakout season. I believe in the man.
Well, I mean, in fairness, it's hard for him not to have a breakout season when he's hardly played in the last 2.
Well, as long as we're playing Rutgers, he's just fantastic.
Right. Hey, I thought we were going to debate Sindelar versus Blau.
Oh, well, we can do that right now as kind of our final point of the evening as we start to wind down.
It's the only reason I'm here.
Okay, there we go. I guess we'll give you the floor here. We have a quarterback.
Someone didn't wake up to watch the Purdue games this summer.
Well, he's an East Coast leader.
I watched like 1.5 of those, and I was like, I never knew when it was live or not live. You know, because it's like, hey, this game is on at 8:30 on a Saturday, and I'm like, great. And then I'm like, I'm pretty sure I already knew this game ended in by like 50.
That and most of the games were, okay, we're beating some nation by 50 points.
Yeah, so I was like, I'm going to watch it anyway because I don't really know how it's going to end, so I'll watch it. So, I mean, I enjoyed it, but it's football season. I know we all love basketball, but I think people actually want to hear about football, which is rare, and we should take advantage of it.
Absolutely. So we do have a quarterback controversy. We have Elijah Sindelar versus David Blau, and for now, Jeff Brohm seems pretty intent on playing both of them to kind of feel it out, but I like that Brohm is kind of the anti-hope in this, in that he wants to find one guy that will be, quote-unquote, the man. So I guess you have the floor here, Lemon. Just kind of give us your breakdown of Sindelar versus Blau.
So the reason we're talking about this is we have a group chat, goes back and forth, talks about just the most ridiculous things in the entire world. I just hope to God that never gets published by anyone. All of us would probably lose our jobs. But
I might get a raise.
Well, you work in a different area than that. So, I mean, and basically the question came up today is who would you choose to play? I mean, if you're the coach and you get to choose your starter, the guy you're going to ride through the game, are you going to pick Blau or are you going to pick Sindelar? And I think Drew and I were the only two that said Sindelar and the rest of you said Blau. So I don't know if you all want to go first since I'm alone here and we'll kind of just see what happens.
Well, I'll go ahead and go. You know, I liked what Sindelar did. He was a pretty slow starter on Saturday night, but I know that part of that was it was his first extensive, like, real game action. And he had some good throws and did well for the most part, but I think Blau was just a little bit more consistent, and I think that experience is important. Not that, you know, I mean, Sindelar's eventually going to have to get some experience, so that's why I'm not too hung up on both of them playing right now, but I could see Brohm just picking one guy by the time we get to the Big Ten season. And to me, Blau was you know, he was a little more efficient. I know he had the two interceptions and they weren't the prettiest, but he was trying to make something happen. He had no running game working for him. He was able to do a little bit more with his feet. And, you know, I think that Blau, with that leadership and that experience, is just, I think he's the better choice right now. But it wasn't a terrible, terrible idea to give Sindelar some real important game reps. And I felt like he responded well for, you know, kind of his first extensive action, because he saw like some mop up duty last year and still had three interceptions and didn't show a whole lot. So it was good to see him play and, you know, play better than we've seen. But to me, Blau is just the more consistent guy.
Yeah. And I don't think I can really argue against that point, because, I mean, we granted this season, you know, it's a whole new season. We've only got one game to go off of. Blau was 18 of 26 for 175, two touchdowns, two interceptions. Sindelar was 15 for 31, so threw five more passes but completed three less, for 118 yards, two touchdowns against just one interception. So they each accounted for 14 of our 28 points. You know, there's, when you look at it, it doesn't look like there's a gigantic difference between the two of them. But the point I think both Drew and myself were trying to make is, you know, Blau's been doing this for 3 years. And has he improved? Of course he's improved. And maybe he'll improve more under Brohm, and maybe he'll quit making these mistakes. But he's made the same mistakes for 3 years. He makes the back-breaking interception constantly. And I know people are going to point out that he's been asked to do a lot. He's been asked to throw the ball all over the field because, quite frankly, we have nothing else on offense at times. And again, that's fair. But you would think with the number of throws, he would learn to make those mistakes less frequently, because the interceptions that he throws are just so bad. I mean, it's not like, oh, it was tipped, and, you know, after that, it's up for grabs. He's thrown almost directly to the other team with half of his interceptions. And when a guy's been doing that for 3 years, at what point do you say, this is just who he is? We can either, you know, work around it and figure out how to game plan so that he doesn't have to make those difficult decisions, thus leading to interceptions. Or we can say, hey, we've got this other guy on the bench. He's younger. You know, he's got a great zip on the ball. Maybe we can move to him. Now, one final thing before I get yelled at by the three of you. I know Purdue has had, you know, what is it, 10 years in a row we've not had the same opening day starter? 10 or 11?
10.
Since 2008.
Yeah.
Okay. We've had a different quarterback take. I mean, you had Marv in 2010 and 2012, but you had Turbush in the middle.
Yeah, yeah. But no consistency from year to year. So you, of course, you want some sort of consistency, but each year has to be viewed differently. I don't believe someone should get the job just because they had the job last year. You have to go into it with a real competition. And to me, if they can't make this choice, if it's so close, I would yield toward giving the younger guy more reps.
I don't think it's that close. I think the ceiling with Blau is a lot higher than with Sindelar. Sindelar's floor isn't as low because of the lack of turnovers, but offense looked was with Blau at quarterback. When he first came in, the offense started whizzing. He knows where the ball goes. He knows where his receivers are. He's capable of making every throw. Plus, he's athletic enough to get out, avoid the rush, make plays downfield. And I think part of why his interceptions are so high, he throws a really good deep ball. We saw the deep ball that went right off of Phillip's shoulder pads because he didn't try to catch it with like hands. And if that pass falls, the numbers don't look the same at all. He's got a huge possible touchdown on his number line, a lot more yardage. And I think why he throws interceptions a lot is he does throw into double coverage, and he's also very accurate when he throws deep. So he's throwing to his receiver. It just happens there's two defenders there as well.
Well, but I think Blau was, it was clear that Blau was the number one choice, I think, because if he wasn't, there was no way he would have been representing the team at the media days, even giving the luncheon talk. He wouldn't have been named the co-captain. It was, you know, Sindelar started coming up into this mix once he injured his shoulder just a few weeks before practice. And at the same time too, I think there's still some adjustment going on when it comes to learning Brohm's offense. It's not something he's going to learn over the spring and summer practices. Like, he's going to improve, I think, throughout this year if we give Blau the chance. Like, the number of interceptions are going to be cut down. I mean, he just, after that second interception, I agreed with putting Sindelar in. He needed at least a breather to calm down because, you know, that was just a really bad pass that I have to admit for a second interception. So I think having Sindelar come in, you know, just when the offense is starting to sputter out a little bit, can be a good mix. But I think Blau is the way to go. And I think he can definitely improve this year.
Yeah, I mean, of course he can improve. But to go back to what Casey said, saying that he throws into double coverage and lends to, and it, you know, gets intercepted. Doesn't that talk about his decision making?
Absolutely. There are faults. Like, it's not a perfect choice by any means. But I don't think Sindelar was, like, exceptionally good at making decisions. The offense floundered a lot when he was in there. That touchdown pass, I mean, that was thrown to double coverage and tipped, and Anthrop just made a hell of a play on it.
Well, it still had to go through the double coverage, though. I mean, he threaded a needle. It's like,
right, but threading a needle is not a sound decision for the most part.
True.
Like, that was a pretty lucky touchdown.
And I think the other thing that we have to consider with Blau is he's on his third offensive coordinator in 3 years, too. I mean, the guy had to be de-shooped last year, and then, you know, you have him running the Malone offense, which, you know, was arguably better, but then if you look at the stats for the year, really wasn't that much better. And now it's like, this is his first time in his fourth year in the program where he has, like, an actual competent offensive staff with a real plan in place. So I can understand why there would still be some issues with development and with his decision making and whatnot. He's not used to having somebody like, oh, hey, this is the right thing to do.
I'm actually in favor of the competition this year. I think they both have enough strengths that they can be successful at times, and I think they'll push each other. It's weird because with Blau in there, you know, receivers were catching passes, the ball was going deep. With Sindelar, he was finding his tight ends. I think there's a happy balance to find there. And this year, we're not going for a Big Ten title. We're looking towards the future. And that future starts next year. Who's going to be our quarterback next year?
Right.
I think both of them need time pretty evenly through the year and set ourselves up for next year.
And even if Blau is the guy next year, you then have Sindelar as a quality backup to end up starting in 2019, possibly, in what would be his final year. And then by then you have Brom,
national championship.
Naturally, but you would have Brom with his guys finally in there. You know, he's got a full amount of time to work on Sipe. And then what's the new kid coming? Jack Plummer, something like that, from Arizona. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see how these guys develop that are coming in as true freshmen under Brom, with the way that he's been able to develop quarterbacks.
Ledman, let me ask you, do you want Sindelar over Blau more because of what Blau did or because of what Sindelar did?
I don't think it's either. I think it's a little bit of both. I think, you know, to go back, like I said, what Drew, the point Drew was making and that I agreed with is that Blau
has... quoting the biggest deviant we all know.
Oh, well, you know, even a blind squirrel finds an acorn every now and then.
I don't think that's apropos here.
I think that's perfectly apropos. You know, Blau has been making these same mistakes for 3 years, the same types of throws, the same throws into these double coverage, triple coverage, where he's just not reading the defense. Or the alternative is he thinks he can make it regardless, which, I mean, I'm not sure that it matters. But both of those are very bad things. You know, Sindelar, of course, he didn't look perfect. He's young. He's nervous, but, you know, he was putting the ball where it needed to be on a lot of those throws. And both of their stats, honestly, would look better if our receivers could catch the ball.
Can we talk about how bad he looked in the two-minute drill? Did you have any faith Sindelar was moving the offense down the field?
You mean at the end of the game?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was bad.
We had like a minute and a half. Like, there was plenty of time to get close.
Mm-hmm.
I also don't know how much of that was play calling versus how much of that was him being scared and looking for a dump off, not having situational awareness of how much time was left.
That's not good for a quarterback.
Yeah, you know what else isn't good for a quarterback? Throwing interceptions.
A 6 yard pass on like third or second down in a 2 minute drill might as well be an interception. I'd rather have an interception 40 yards down the
field.
That's
nonsense.
It cost us like 40 seconds and any realistic chance of getting into the end zone.
Okay, you throw a 6 yard pass, you still get another play. if you throw an interception, the game's over.
The game was over as soon as he made that completion.
I mean, it wasn't actually, though.
Honestly, he would have been better off dropping that pass. Because, I mean, it was one minute left, no timeouts. Like, and then the pass on the fourth down was nowhere close. Like, had Cinderlar just waited, like, 2 more seconds to make that pass, the receiver would have had time to get the first down and get out of bounds.
But look, okay, so I guess it all comes down to, I'm not saying I'm going to be mad either way, because I think Blau has a lot of talent. He's got a good arm, as Casey said. He's good at the deep ball. It's just a matter of he's got to cut down on the mistakes. And if, you know, next week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks down the line, Blau separates himself, I'm 100% behind the guy. I don't care who plays.
Never said you were personally attacking him.
No, I know. But, you know, the internet, you put this
even
out.
Even though you made a voodoo doll.
But I mean, you know, you start arguing one side against the other, and suddenly someone on the internet's gonna think I like hate David Blau and he like kicked my dog once or something. So
no,
I mean,
we know you don't hate him. Only Drew hates Blau. We all know that.
That is true. Drew does hate
him. He's not here to defend himself, so yes, we can just go ahead and leave that in. But I mean, whoever Brom decides is gonna be the better player is who I want to play. Because we're just four yahoos on a podcast. Jeff Brom is being paid.
Do not dismiss everything we're doing right now.
No.
By that definition, no one should be listening.
Well, I mean, really, should they?
Yes. T-shirt money, Ledman.
Yes, we want the sponsorships.
Yeah. But I'm saying, he's the one who's got to make the decision. He's the one who I want to make the decision.
Sure, but that is such... No, you can't go... We can't talk for an hour and then you'd be like, well, whatever the coaches do. Whee.
No, I'm saying I see them for one game during during a week for, 3 hours or so. They see them every single practice. I don't know what goes on behind closed doors. I don't get a review film of them each and every practice.
You don't?
No.
You're not on the email list?
No, I didn't know you were.
Yeah. What, you guys aren't there?
All right. Well, I think it's time we should probably bring this creaky plane in for a landing here. Going on for about an hour or so, but it's been a good hour. It's been a good return to the podcast, and it's actually been fun to talk about some competent and exciting Purdue football for once. So
we've had a no football talk ban for like what, 8 months?
The start of the podcast.
Yeah. Didn't we play an entire like sad music little montage?
So that was Drew just yapping about recruiting. I'm just like, this is boring. I'm gonna put some music in the background. It's boring and sad.
All right. So as we sign off, you don't have to say your score, but I want to hear who you think's gonna win. Because if you want to see their score guesses, you have to go to the lovely site hammerandrails.com.
Oh, snap.
You're assuming that Casey has his podcast up in time.
Oh, he will.
Yeah.
We have all of our predictions on the website tomorrow for your reading pleasure, probably around lunchtime.
Let's go around the horde here for some final thoughts. Juan, what are your final thoughts tonight?
I think Ohio will open up with a lead, but I think Purdue will fight back and win the game tomorrow night.
Excellent. How about you, Casey?
Purdue dominance. It's going to be an event. It's going to be fun. I'm going to be angry that I'm not at the game all night, but I hope everyone enjoys it.
Ledman, how about yourself?
Purdue's going to lead from start to finish. Much drunk in the stands.
Yeah. What now, Juan?
As for me, I'm just hoping to avoid the letdown, as I said earlier.
Your mouth.
I am too long time of a Purdue fan. I'm fully prepared for the 35-17 five interception game, but in reality, I think Purdue is going to win. I've thought this was going to be a win even before we saw them against Louisville. It's going to be an interesting one. I think it'll be a little bit closer than we expected, but this is a game Purdue needs to win, and I think it's one where Brom really starts to earn that paycheck, where he has them avoiding the letdown and everything else. So I think we pull that off, and As one final thought before we sign off tonight, I'm not sure where you guys are listening from, wherever you are out there. I know we only get like maybe 1,000, 2,000 listens to this every time. But if you're listening in Florida to this during the hurricane, well, I'm hoping you guys are staying safe. You're getting through the storm down there. I know there's a lot of Purdue people in South Florida and Florida in general. And this one's a monster, and it's got me scared. My mother-in-law lives in Miami. I've got a bunch of friends down there. One of my buddies from Purdue lives on Miami Beach and has already had to evacuate. So if you are listening or if you know somebody down there in the storm, stay safe, stay dry. Do what you can to take care of yourself and your family and friends. And we're thinking about you and we're praying for you and to get through this. So for Ledman, for Juan, for Casey and myself, this is T-Mill signing off from the Hammer.